866 of the Survival Podcast. Got a great one for you today. I've got Andrew Ibsen, from Legion Security Solutions with me today. And we're going to be talking about home security for the everyday person. Andrew's a pretty unique guy. He's a former Green Beret. We'll talk about how that fits into this and how it doesn't. Green Berets have very specific missions, and you're probably not going to be one in your living room like a ninja at 3 o'clock in the morning when somebody tries to break in your house. But there's a lot of things that we can learn about security from people that have this type of background. He's got a great book out, too, as well. We'll be talking about that. And he's got a really cool company. So we'll be talking about all of these things today, but mostly what you can do to make your home more secure so that we can prevent the problem in the first place rather than have to respond to it after it happens. Before we do that, though, let's go ahead and talk about our sponsors of the day. And sponsor of the day number one today, promise it wasn't planned, but it is a layer of security. K9Academy.us, that's Joel Ryle's company, where he does training on how to train your dogs. And this could be anything from just a good homestead dog to a protection dog and anything in between. Joel is also the owner of Fortress Canine. Fortress Canine actually provides some of the best trained protection dogs there are. I mean, what his dogs can do is absolutely phenomenal. And so that's another layer of potential security there as well. So it fits the show well. But I would recommend you get on over to K9Academy.us and at least take the free course, the Problem Solving Library. You can decide if some of the other things Joel teaches are things that you want to learn more about. Next up today is Above Phone, where you can rise above and take back your power with privacy phones, laptops, and tablets that unlock new freedoms and protect your data. What I really want you to understand is that if you are using a typical device, your provider is spying on you. The device manufacturer is spying on you. And additionally, the app manufacturers are spying on you. You can make not all of it, but 99% of it go away by using devices from Above Phone. And if you do have to use that one app or that those two apps that you just really have to use that come out of the standard app store instead of the ones that come out of the private app store, you can put them in a little jail. About security, right? They're locked in that little jail and they can't do the thing that they do except when you let them out when you're actively using them. Check it out today at Above Phone and really check out again, not just the phones, the tablets and the laptops are amazing. I'm sitting here talking to you with an Above Phone laptop right now. They are fantastic pieces of technology. And if you think, well, I'm not going to be able to do this, it's different. They'll even give you an expert to onboard you to your new device on a 45-minute call. With that, let's go ahead and get our special guest on with us today. And that is Andrew Ibsen. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jack. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. I'm glad to have you here. Let's kind of start off with a little bit about your background before we dig into this topic. Like, obviously, you were in the Army. If you were a Green Beret, that's kind of a prerequisite. Let's go back to, like, you're trying to figure out what to do with your life, and you think, of all the things you could do, I know, I'll go join the military. How did that go down?
Yeah, I mean, I joined the National Guard when I was like 17, still in high school.
Okay.
It was kind of a thing, you know, my dad was in, my grandfathers were in. So I did that and then ended up going active duty and pretty much staying totally like 23 years. So, yeah, just it was kind of a thing. I did get out for a year and then I went back in because I just realized that's really where I needed to be. I enjoyed it. I was good at it. So.
Very cool, man. What made you decide to go the route of, you know, special forces? I mean, it's not a super easy thing to do for sure. It really is very challenging and it can be very dangerous. And it's something that, you know, so a very small number of people are going to join the military in the first place. And then an even smaller number are going to join the military and go into some sort of combat MOS. And then a very small portion are also going to go that route. What made you do that?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I was in the infantry before, so I did about 7 years in the infantry before I went to special forces. And it was just responsibility. You get more responsibility. You get, I guess, an opportunity to have more of an impact strategically and operationally. You do get to do cool stuff. You also got to do a lot of stuff that's not so cool, and it's not always like movies, right? But I had a few friends that had gone, and so kind of just felt that pull to go over there.
So how does this then translate to what you're able to do with advising people for, you know, civilian home security? Because some of it translates and a lot of it really doesn't. A lot of times when people say, I got this, you know, ex Green Beret or this Navy SEAL that's advising me on security for my house. I'm like, well, it depends on the angle there, because, you know, when you're on a special forces team, you have all these other highly trained operators around you. Everybody knows their job. And Bill in his living room in the middle of the night with his wife and two kids does not. So there's, like, there is a overlap, but there is also, like, I guess a kind of a sectorization of things that do and do not maybe apply.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because if you look up home defense books or home security books, you're going to see a lot of Navy SEAL guide to this or that or home invasions. And just because somebody was a SEAL doesn't mean they know. And I'm not trying to put anybody down. Just because somebody was a Green Beret doesn't mean they know necessarily. Specifically for me, I was a intel sergeant for the majority of my time as a Green Beret, and that's, I was still on a team, still a Green Beret, but you have to understand enemy capabilities, you have to understand their tactics, the weapons they'll use, and we would do things, vulnerability assessments, on our own team house, and it was my job to understand what the enemy can do, find a vulnerability through the eyes of the enemy, and then fix the vulnerability. So That's kind of where the home security thing came from. I was, you know, I did a few other specialized trainings and missions that helped with that as well. But that part does carry over, you know, being on the flat range or doing CQB helps, but just cause you can shoot doesn't mean you know what you're doing at home security.
Yeah.
So, kind of putting them all together.
So, what do most homeowners like misunderstand about things like burglary and home invasion and just personal security in general?
Well, you know, I think a lot of this happens with, it could be a school shooting, it could be a church issue. The thought of it can't happen here or it won't happen here is a really bad mindset. So even if you live in a really safe neighborhood, you should always be prepared for some sort of issue. So don't, you know, I'm probably going to say it several times, but lock your doors. You know, the time of leaving your doors unlocked is gone. So lock your doors. So that kind of thing, that misunderstanding of that it's not going to happen, because it definitely can. People don't really care. Some people, you know, different levels of, I guess, attacker or intruder. From opportunistic all the way up to a targeted attack, you know, there's somebody, you know, Vance Bolter, you know who that is, the Minnesota politician killer.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Targeted attack. Nancy Guthrie, targeted attack. The Tepe murders in Ohio, targeted attack. So, you know, just because somebody's not stealing something from your home doesn't mean that you might not be a target in a nice neighborhood.
Actually, nice neighborhoods are where nice things are and people that have money are. And that's what I'm not going to target poor people to steal from if I'm a criminal, because unless they have something I specifically know about, I'm probably not going to get anything. But if I break into some place with an $80,000 SUV in the driveway, there's a pretty good chance there's something valuable in there.
Right. Yep.
You know, because it's not like they do this for fun. I guess there are some sickos, but most criminal activity is incentive driven. Like there's something that they want and that's why they're doing it. And usually that is somehow connected to value, money, or just a simple desire to do harm.
Yeah. And that kind of going up the rung of, you know, from opportunistic to a targeted attack, you know, there, people are going to be targeted for burglaries at a higher level. You know, somebody stealing copper wire may not go into a really nice neighborhood. Mm-hmm. However, if I use the example of the Wet Bandits from Home Alone, they did a targeted attack, they did reconnaissance, they did surveillance, and it was for the nice stuff in the neighborhood. So,
you know, that movie actually was a pretty good textbook study in what criminals do, except they made it slapstick for the purpose of entertainment. but the concept of, you know, posing as a law enforcement officer, getting better reconnaissance on the home, knowing exactly when to go and what you're going for, that is actually spot on. I watched a show years and years ago. Well, I didn't really watch it. I kind of walked through the room while my wife was watching one of the daytime talk shows. And they had what got my attention is they had a guy on that was like this incredibly successful burglar. We talk about upper end, like this guy had robbed like the Kellogg family, like as in Kellogg cereal, right? So that's a level that this guy operated at. And they said, well, when did you usually break in? He said, well, in the middle of the day when nobody expects it. And I would go in to the house. I'd go straight to the master bedroom because that's where the jewelry and in the safe and everything is. And the first thing I would do is close the door and lock it. That way, if somebody figured out something was going on, you know, dad comes down the hallway and they start arguing with each other. Mom and dad start arguing. You locked us out. No, you did. And while that's going on, I'm going out the window. And he ended up, the only way he never got caught in the act. He got caught like due to some way he was fencing stuff. So if that hadn't happened, he might still be out there doing this today.
I think I've seen that one. He was like in jail and he was doing a interview.
Yeah, like community service to get off earlier or whatever is why he was doing it. Yeah.
Well, that's true. And it does happen most of the time during the day because everybody's at work. Yeah. The majority.
Everyone's at work. No one expects it, you know. And now I guess that's another thing from Home Alone, right? You get a plumbing van or something like that. Oh, you know, they're having some work done or something.
Yep.
When you assess a home, what are the first vulnerabilities you look for?
So whenever I do an assessment, I don't go straight to what I want to look at first. I do this very thorough, very complete, and it can be kind of boring, but I'm gonna go from the outside in. So I start looking at the neighborhood. I look at the edge of the property line and then work my way in. So terrain, is there any kind of channelization? Is there any kind of restriction of movement? Is it a neighborhood? Do they have a fence, a gate, that kind of thing? And then working my way in, you know, we talk about layers of security. So all I even ask, do they know their neighbors? Because that's a huge thing. Have a good neighbor network, you know, neighborhood watch or something like that. And then work my way from the outside in to the property, up to the property itself, the house, and then I'll start looking at the doors. And I do a pretty thorough examination of the doors themselves, again, for locks. There's houses with exterior doors that don't have deadbolts on them, which is crazy, but it's just the way it is. So, and then I'll go on the inside and kind of examine if they have an alarm system and things like that. And different things they do throughout their day. Do they have lighting on that's left on at night? Things like that.
Gotcha. I mean, I have a friend named Brian Black that ran a company for years called ITS Tactical, and one of his favorite little hobbies was, you know, lock sport, basically.
Yeah.
And I remember he gave me a basic pick set. No instruction, just a rake and a tension, right? And kind of just told me how it works. And I went home and put it to work on my locks. And the speed at which I was able to open a deadbolt and a regular, doorknob lock, both of them, and get into my own home with it locked was shocking to me.
Yeah.
There are better locks than I had at the time anyway that make that a little more difficult. But your standard, like, quick set or whatever, it was so easy to do that it was frightening. The deadbolt in my situation was easier to get into than the thing as far as picking the lock, not breaking into the house. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. Well, I locked it. They're not going to get in. I want to ask you, how do we not go to paranoia? Like, my dad-in-law, before he passed away, he had a setup where you have the deadbolt that needs a key on both sides of the door. And I understand why people do that, because if I can break a window and stick my arm in, I can open it. My view of that always was the odds that I'm going to have somebody trapped in that house that can't get out during a crisis is probably higher than the house getting broken into. So you don't want to go too far, but you also don't want to leave things that are easy layups.
Yeah. So that's – it kind of takes – you have to take into account your family situation. You have little kids. Are they going to be able to get out? And that deadbolt on the key on both sides is very important if you're going for the most secure type of deadbolt. But again, do you have kids? Are they going to have a key to get out? So you do have to take that into account. Really, I think it's about kind of understanding where you're at, your baseline, your kids, all that, and then making it a routine. So my routine is I will always check the doors. even if the wife or kids locked up, or they said they locked up, I'm still going to go check. And it's, I don't feel paranoid about it. It's just part of what I do before I go to bed, you know, 9 p.m. routine or whatever. That is an actual thing. So if you built that into your system, it can help a lot to kind of reduce that. It's not like somebody's going to come in and break in the middle of the night. It's, you're just making sure all that stuff is set up. Doors are locked, alarm set, things like that. So yeah, you have, you know, we have an exterior. Well, one of the things that I do promote is having an exterior, a secondary device on your doors. So I have a younger kid. I made sure that they were able to undo that secondary device.
Sure.
And teach them how to do it. Otherwise, I wouldn't feel comfortable using it because you can't get in the door or out of the door.
So. Can't get out. That's my biggest concern with any of these things is making sure we don't have a fire and somebody can't get the hell out. Like that's...
So testing it out, if, you know, wife, if you've got elderly people in the house, if you've got kids, test it out and make sure they can use it. And if not, you need to look at something else.
Yeah, that was always my concern with my dad-in-law, especially as he kind of slid toward Alzheimer's, like, dude, you know. But, yeah, definitely I think there's got to be that balance there. How should people think about layered security instead of relying on just one measure? Like, you know, you always hear the guy, I got a gun. I hope they break it. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. Like, you, while you're asleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, dreaming a dream of dreams, like, you don't know what you're dealing with. So, like, you have cameras or alarms. Like, how does this all layer together to make things more secure?
Yeah. And again, I'm glad you brought that up because I hear that a lot too. Like, do you have a plan? Do you have this, this, and this? And I've got a gun. It's not a plan, and you don't want that. You want to stop it before it ever happens, which is kind of the point of the book, was to stop the wolf before it gets in the door. Because I don't want to, as romantic as it sounds to fight off a home invader, I don't want that to happen. I've got a family, you know. I don't want to deal with that. So, you know, the layered approach is like I was talking about the different layers of criminal, from opportunistic up to targeted. So, you know, having light, motion-activated lighting is going to be able to maybe scare off an opportunistic criminal. But you don't want it just one thing. You want a gate, right? A fence and a gate. That's going to stop quite a few people. It's a physical barrier. It might not be that big of a deal, but they could hop it. But it's a psychological barrier as well. Opening somebody's gate to get onto their property lets them know that for sure that they're doing something wrong. That might scare off somebody. So that's one layer. Motion activated lighting at your property line. If somebody pulls into your driveway, you want a light to go off. You want cameras, which are much more of detection, but they can be a deterrence as well. So all of these things you want to, you know, from physical barriers to like gates and fences to deterrence, lights, cameras, and then at your door, you also want it to be hard to get into. So that's the denial, right? The bolts, 3-inch screws in the strike plate that go into the frame, things like that. So you want as many obstacles, physical or psychological, for somebody to have to get through, and you'll end up turning people away. As you go up that rung, though, you get to a targeted criminal that's looking, you know, Vance Bolter or something, that's where it's going to be harder. So you have to rely a lot on the denial because they're still going to go do what they're going to do.
Yeah, let's, before we get into the denial, let's talk about the, let's say the posturing that says this is the wrong place, right? Yes. Like, not every, like, it's good that, like, you know, if you had motion detectors, people can't see where the beams are or whatever. But I also know that criminals generally look for things that are good opportunities. Like if I was going to mug somebody and I got one person walking down the street with his head on a swivel that's got his shit together and looks confident, and I got another person dicking around on their phone with earbuds in and you know, with their pants halfway down their ass so they can't even run, I know which one I'm picking. And I think when you look at a house – you know, the one with the garage door open all the time is probably easier to get into where it's always closed and things like that.
Yeah. And having stuff out, too. If you've got kind of a cluttered yard, if you have things of value that are just out in plain sight, that can also attract somebody. for one, yeah, they can see what stuff you've got, but they also, it can help make them think that you're not prepared, that you're not going to have an alarm system, that you're not going to be aware of your surroundings. You might not lock your doors. It's going to attract stuff like that. So having a well-kept yard, stuff put up, organized, that's also going to prevent somebody. A yard being mowed can actually do quite a bit to deter somebody, because they're going to say, you care about your property. You probably have several different layers of security in place. So if you have a, you know, unmowed yard, or, you know, mail, you know, everybody's heard of that, mail piling up when you're gone, that shows that, you know, nobody's there, or you're just too lazy to go get the mail. So, you know, those are different things that you can do to kind of show somebody that you do care and that you don't want to come onto my property.
Yeah, if I wanted to rob your house, probably the best time in the world would be about 2 o'clock in the afternoon while you and your family are on vacation, especially if you don't have a house sitter. Like, yeah. I might be able to hang out and make a sandwich before I leave. And that shit happens too. That's not just something that happens. I actually have a friend who he said when his place was robbed, you could tell the guy had lunch before he left.
Well, yeah. That's a rough day. But, you know, not posting stuff on Facebook too, not checking into a restaurant, or, you know, posting beach pictures when you live in Nebraska the same day, you know, that might show, hey, somebody's gone or whatever. But, you know, again, it goes back to the different layers. I've got a beware of dog sign. I do have a dog, and, you know, that's for several reasons, but you can put that out even if you don't have a dog. It's going to make somebody think, well, maybe not, you know, maybe I don't want to do that.
Dogs, even a dog that is not physically intimidating, dogs are a variable, a problem, something I would prefer not to have. I would rather not have a dog barking its brains out at me if I'm trying to rob a house, because I want to be stealthy. I don't want anybody to know that I'm there, especially neighbors. Like, I might have a plan to come in and assault you, but if your neighbor makes a phone call, I got a problem. And I think that's like another, like I was talking about with my buddy Joel, like another layer of security. He trains full on protection dogs. And if you went to someone's house that had two of those, you're totally screwed. Yeah. I mean, one is bad, but two is really bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, a Lhasa officer or something that goes ballistic in the middle of the night is just another thing that. What I'm always trying to get to with people, unless you, like you keep mentioning, if you're specifically targeted, things change.
Yeah.
But if I'm just looking for a target, then I want the softest target with the highest reward. And even kind of like, you know, they have a show called Dumbest Criminals. Even that guy knows to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. it is. And that is a layer. And I do talk about that in the book. Same thing. You're a Lhasa officer, a Yorkie that barks a lot. Is one thing, and then I have a Malinois, so he's detection, but he's also a deterrence, and if it comes down to it, he's coming out first, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I have one too. Yeah.
he's part of my security plan for sure.
It's Malinois are like German Shepherds that can do parkour. That's why I describe them. In the first year of settling them in can be, it can wear you out.
They're great, especially for home security, but I do warn people, don't, maybe if you've never had one or if this is your first dog, don't let it be your first dog. Not good.
Now, if you get a fully trained dog delivered and you follow what's given with that, that's a different story. But, you know, we got ours, she was 12 weeks. So we went through the whole Maligator Velociraptor cycle with her.
Yeah.
So how do we also, like, whenever I get into the subject, I always talk about, like, if you let me walk around your house and find vulnerabilities, and then we close all those up and then I do it again, I will find vulnerabilities forever. There's always going to be something. How do we balance being prepared and well defended with not going to a level of paranoia? You know, where you see these videos of, and it's all bullshit, I know, but like these women that are, they're in a hotel or a cruise ship and they have coat hangers and it's just nonsensical. But that's actually hinting at like a paranoia that can take over if you go too far with this stuff.
Yeah. I do think that you should always be improving as you're able to. And definitely not – you don't want to get paralysis over it, and because you can overwhelm yourself mentally, but always improving your foxhole, right? If you've got cameras that you need to get, whatever, like as you do that, you'll feel better about it. That's what I think. Like, you don't need to have claymores and, barbed wire strung out in the yard. So improve as you can, as you go along, and you get to a certain level of it, you can feel more comfortable with it. Knowing you've got somebody would have to get through all these different layers to get to the house. And I go back again to the doors, just make sure the doors are locked and you have an alarm system. You know, you're 300% more likely to get broken into if you don't have an alarm system. So those different layers, right? A fence, lighting, cameras, a door that's locked, an alarm system, and if you've got the means, a dog, and you've got an internal plan. And so if you do all that stuff, I don't have a whole bunch of weird stuff and booby traps out in the backyard. I just have a bunch of layers that somebody's going to have to get through, so I feel better about it, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. One of the things I have going for me, and most of my neighbors do as well, and coincidentally, we have very low issues with crime around here, even though there is significant crime, let's say, a mile away, is all of these properties are larger in their perimeter fenced. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that doesn't really fit most suburban situations. But one of the reasons I believe it works is because if you're on my property, you can't pretend that you didn't know, right? Like, it makes me think of, I used to hunt at a place, and they only had the place open on the weekends. They opened it like Friday afternoon, and they like kind of side hustled, and you hunted through Sunday, and then they went back to their life. And they had people that would always come out there and try to hunt on their property and things like that, because it was a wild boar place. So they were constantly stalking and had a lot of animals. And they put on their gate, "You're not lost, you're trespassing." And I asked the guy, "How well did that work?" He goes, "We don't have problems anymore." He said that was and they like spray painted it like redneck style on a piece of plywood, like where you're like, "Oh, this is going to be bad."
Yeah.
You know, and these guys are like some of the nicest people in the world. But he said the level of deterrent that was surprising. And every time they caught somebody, "Oh, I was just lost."
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you can't claim to be lost. I think there's a lot to taking away plausible deniability for someone, if you can do it. Like I said, in a suburb, you're not going to have I have a 5-foot triple barbed wire chain link fence on 3 acres. Like my gate looks like something from Hogan's Heroes. Not everybody's going to have that.
Yeah. Even, kind of going back to that psychological barrier, even a white picket fence with a gate is going to do something, or, a normal fence for the backyard.
Yeah.
If somebody has to open a gate, there's no question that they're on your property at that point. And that's a stronger defense, too, if, it goes to court or whatever. There's no question about it. So, yeah, no trespassing signs out in the country for sure helps with that type of stuff, too. So, and I'm kind of probably in a similar setup that you are. I do have to think about suburban, because that's the majority of people.
Yeah, suburban. Most people live,
Yeah, so it's not just for, out in the country or whatever, but if you can, that's a good, it's easier. I think it's probably easier to set up in the country because you have a little bit more leeway, like you were talking about, but even
just the standoff space. I mean, it is very normal for someone that's selling something, right, or advertising something to walk through a suburban neighborhood and walk up to every door and knock on it, mm-hmm. so much so that technically you're trespassing, but no one treats it that way. You get out into the sticks a little bit. I mean, you look at that gate and then it's just a sign that says the dogs protect the property. If you need help, make a phone call.
Yeah.
And I think it's what can you do to make that person think twice, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like, I think signage is a good thing. Having cameras that are, maybe somewhat visible, or even a sign that says, video in place on, for security on property or something like that.
Yeah, because if you're trying to hide your cameras, all that's going to do is detect, and it's going to be used for after the fact. So having them visible is okay, as long as you're, you know, if you're worried about aesthetics, get them, make them look nice. But yeah, it, that can help. It's not going to turn away everybody. You know, everybody's seen the, you know, Ring doorbell cameras where people are just jiggling handles on the car. Yeah. They don't care. They've got a mask on, but you know, so you've got deterrence and you've got a detection element to cameras. But yeah, anything you can do, lighting, as soon as somebody crosses your property, it's lit up. That's just a whole, that's just another layer that you can have, you know?
Yeah, we have just solar power because we have such a big property, solar powered motion detector lighting everywhere. And I'm back to the paranoid thing, because like, a light will go on and I'm like, who's after? I'm like, the dog's taking a pee.
Right.
Like, that's not, but I think it does, like, okay, now your whole concealment idea to get to the house is ruined. And, you know, a lot of these things, like you said, they're not weird or high tech, or we're not setting Claymore mines up or something, you know, and stuff like that is very dangerous and probably very stupid, because even if you get the right person legally, you open yourself up to a lot of liability there.
Get the right person, yeah. I don't consider myself a prepper, but yeah. I am prepared in several different aspects. But this isn't, you know, the book is really, it's for normal people, but the principles are there too if the lights go out and things start getting weird. You know, it's still, the principles are there. Like solar, like you mentioned, solar powered lights are great. I have those too. I mean, I can get away with a little bit more, like probably you can, but it's going to be there. If the power goes out, I still have solar powered lights. So, it's different than preparing for the doomsday zombie apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
It's just normal life, and normal people can prepare like this. Very basic. There's nothing in the book. I don't cover one man CQB or anything like that. It's basic stuff you can do.
Agreed. You're not going to learn that from a book anyway. Either you've got that skill set or you don't.
Right.
If you think you learned something like that from a book, you're probably a danger to yourself and others. Can we talk about, though, maybe just some low-cost or no-cost changes people can make right away to improve their own home security? And, you know, we are the Survival Podcast, but we're really a lifestyle design show, and we have – I bet you 80% of my people live in suburbs.
Right. I guess the biggest thing is pushing your perimeter, you can call it a perimeter, out as far as you can. So that's neighbors. Getting to know your neighbors is so important, and a lot of people, even in suburbs, don't really do that. They don't want to talk to people, or, you know, it's not like block parties happen all the time, maybe in an HOA or something. But get to know your immediate neighbors and as far out as you can, because they're going to help look after your house when you're gone. If you're at work and maybe somebody works from home, they can, you know, not necessarily nosy, but if they can see something going on at your house, and they can call you and say, hey, is this truck supposed to be here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just things like that. So, or a neighbor of a neighbor got broken into and they can tell you, you know, so that's one of the biggest things I think people overlook is the neighbor network. So get to know your neighbors, be as civil as possible. I understand it's not always easy, but you know, it is what it is. So at least if you don't get along with them, just don't have conversations with them, but at least be civil. Help them out, you know, pick up their mail for them, offer that stuff, and then they'll reciprocate. So a couple other things, the doors, again, 3-inch screws in the strike plate, that can help. That's not going to stop necessarily, but it's going to move your door from maybe a 1-kick door to a 5-kick door. You know, so that's going to give you time to react. It's going to maybe deter, they might just stop doing it and leave. I think an alarm system is very important. And that's more of a low cost. They do cost money, but you know, you can get ones that are standalone. They're not even monitored. You know, somebody opens your door and they hear an alarm getting ready to go off. They don't know if it's monitored or not. So that might scare them off too. So those are just a couple things, but the neighbor one's huge.
Yeah. The alarms that are loud with strobe lights, those tend to be very like all your illusions of being undetected just, are gone. I've had one go off on me, and it situation where the person whose house I was staying at didn't realize they had set it. And all I did was walk through the living room, and all of a sudden it's like a disco with a blaring thing. He comes running down the stairs like, is it you? I'm like, yeah, it's me, dumbass. Yeah. But, you know, if I'm breaking into a house and that goes off, I'm a little distracted at that point.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And I do think, like, signs and stuff, like, we do have home security or whatever are pretty damn effective. I also think a lot of people need to understand how many ways there are to get into a house. Like, most garages can be gotten into very, very easily. And then once I'm inside the garage, I have time to deal with the connecting door to the house. And especially, like, a lot of people do the things, and I have to say I've done this in the past too, living in the suburbs. You have a cat. Mm-hmm. You have a garage door open. You leave the little gap under the door, but now there's a little gap at the top of the door, and you can just reach in and pop the thing and lift the door up, right? I mean, there's so many ways to get into a home that are not damaging so that it's obvious somebody did it, right? Like, I could do that, slide into your home and close that garage door, and now I have all the time in the world, you know, to get away. And some of the stuff I've seen people do is, like, you think if you would apply your creativity to something legitimate, right, you could be pretty successful. Like, one guy, I actually watched a story on what he would do. He would go pretend to be a valet. He'd get your keys, turn the GPS on in the car and figure out where you lived and drive home with your keys in your car, into your garage, with your garage door opener, load up your shit in the car and take off with it. Right. And by the time, you know, you're just like trying to find your car while your house is being cleaned out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's like, you should never set home on your GPS in your car, 'cause then you just gave up your address if somebody goes in your car.
Mine's Fort Worth PD.
Yeah, there you go.
If somebody ever manages to do it, which I think it'd be hard anyway, but they're going to end up going to the Fort Worth Police Department.
Yeah. you know, the garage thing, that's a good point, too. You know, you can use a coat hanger most of the time and reach through the weather stripping on the top of the garage door and hook the handle. I don't necessarily say take it off, but you can tie it up to where you can't reach it. But, yeah, it can be easy. I guess going back to lighting and cameras, positioning those in places where it's called dead space, you can't see, or, you know, you can't easily see, it's very important to have that stuff covered. So, you know, some houses have, like, an alcove or, like, a kind of a walkway, and it blocks the views from the neighbors. And so having that covered with a camera is important because neighbors can't see it. Or the back door kind of thing, you know. So, yeah. Then getting into houses, you talked about lock picking. I don't really cover lock picking too much just because it's really not – unless somebody's that high-level targeted attacker, they're not going to pick a lock. But it is really easy to – it's called loitering or slipping or bypassing a doorknob. So I always say the deadbolt's important. Because you can use a piece of plastic trash. I've got a cut smart water bottle that is my favorite tool to get into a door that's not doesn't have a deadbolt because it just slides right in there. Most doors aren't hung properly. There's supposed to be that little dead latch that prevents the plunger from moving. Most of the time it falls inside the strike plate, so the whole thing moves. So just a piece of trash can get in.
Most doors. Yeah, the old credit card trick, basically.
Yeah, Barrack's credit card trick.
If you get locked out of your house, ask the cop to help you. They'll break right in. I've seen them do it because they learn how to do it because they investigate so many crimes where people have done it, you know. And I think one of the things I think that makes people vulnerable is that most people are, in fact, good people. So they don't think like bad people. And the way that you have to handle this is you have to actually mentally put yourself in the place of the criminal. And because once you do that, then you can look at your entire situation differently. You can evaluate it differently. You say, if I was going to, how would I? And that's how you best find these things. And I think a lot of people have a hard time doing that just because they're not the person. And I know it's going to sound sexist, or I think women tend to have a harder time with it than men. I think that they tend to be more of the, that won't happen here, you know, yeah. that type of thing than guys. There are exceptions. I know some women will kill your ass dead in a heartbeat, but those are exceptions. That's, I'm talking about the center of the bell curve here.
Yeah. Yeah. So that two points on that. So having somebody else look at your house is important. Somebody that you trust, or, you know, if I would get hired to do that, cause I am going to look through that stuff. And I have a, it's called a tapes, matrix. It's basically how to look at each doorway and how you're going to, through the eyes of somebody else that's trying to break in, how you're going to get in. So threat, approach, payoff, ease of access, surveillance, and how to rate that. So there's different scales, right? 1 through 5. And so having that, you can look at how you're going to do it through the eyes of an enemy. It is hard to do, or through the eyes of an intruder. It can be hard to do, but having somebody else do it for you, a friend. The example I always use is that lock that doesn't quite lock right. You've got to jiggle it a little bit to get it to lock. Well, you might just get used to that, you know, or the old truck that you have to, like, you know, hold the key a certain way to get it started. Mm-hmm. You might just get used to that, but somebody else gets in there like, what's wrong with your truck? Or this door is messed up. So having somebody else look at it, that way you're not biased to your own house or your own stuff.
And I think we are anyway, right? Yeah. Like, we always want to believe, well, I'm good.
Right.
You know, I'm fine. Like, I don't know how many people I've seen defend something that if it was their buddy doing it would be like, bro, you need to knock that off.
Right.
And I think it's just basic human instinct that, you know, we, and I think part of it is some level of stress self-preservation. Like, if you actually walked around worried about everything that could happen all the time, you'd be neurotic and you'd end up in a padded room somewhere. Like, sure. There is a certain amount of sensory input that our kind of reptile brain locks out like a bouncer and says, no, we're not going to let that in right now. But then it can go too far. But listen, we've kind of talked about, and I think this is good, talking about it from a preventive standpoint, because I think if you do the right things from a preventive standpoint, you can get rid of like 90% of the potential problems that you'll have. However, there is the 10%, whether it's targeted or just somebody decided they wanted your shit. What do you do for a family to prepare them for when it goes wrong? It's 2:00 in the morning. Mom hears a noise, the dog barks or whatever, and you realize there's someone in your house. You've got a kid or two on top of all this. And, you know, everybody says, I'll get the gun or whatever. But, I mean, you know, there's a lot of moving parts in that. And it would be better that other family members knew what they should be doing in that situation as well, right? So how do you work through that with someone that you're working with?
Yeah, so first is having a plan. I think I'd mentioned earlier, like, a lot of people's plan is they're going to get a gun and they're going to shoot them. That's not going to work. That's not a plan. And does your family know that plan? So, yeah, it's having a plan, having it rehearsed, and actually going through it with your family members. I don't get too into that in the book. That might be a, you know, follow-on book that I'm going to actually talk about planning, emergency planning. But having it rehearsed, having a code word, especially for kids, is really important. And I'll give one of my code words away for a storm, tornado, right?
Yeah.
The kids, you know, you wake up, if you got like a 5-6-year-old and you're like, hey, we got to go, they may just roll over.
Yeah.
You know, not to traumatize them. Yeah. But having rehearsed this several times, they know I wake them up and I say, tornado, tornado, tornado. They're getting up, getting their shoes, and going to the shelter.
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm not freaking them out. It's generally, you know, I'll be calm whenever I do it because I don't want to pass any stress onto them. But so you'll have a different code word for an intruder. And then you have to run through your plan. You know, are you getting a gun? Do you have a gun? What kind of gun are you getting? And that's a whole other discussion. Rifle, shotgun, pistol, what kind of ammo you're going to use. But you have to understand where your kids are at. Are they on the other side of the house? What can you not shoot at because rounds will go through drywall? So you have to understand all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, in most floor plans, 3-2, 4-2s, right? You got primary master bedroom on one side, and you got your secondary bedrooms on the other. So now you've got somebody between you and your family, right? Mm-hmm. You and your kids.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's all the stuff that you have to work through and kind of, you know, it can be kind of overwhelming if you don't know. I guess this is the tactical aspect where this does come into play, but it's not just you're clearing your whole house. What are you doing with your kids? Mm-hmm. Do you have a safe room? You know, it doesn't have to be a bunker, but it needs to be a room that you can defend. So having an extra lock on the door, having a plan for calling 911, a panic button, you know, things like that. So really just working through that and then rehearsing it so your family knows.
I mean, just one variable like kids can change everything. If you break in my house and I know you're here and I'm in my room and there's really only one way in there, I'm probably sitting up some level of an ambush and I'm calling 911 and I'm hoping they get there before I have to kill you. But if I have to kill you, I have to kill you. If I've got kids on the other side of the house, that's a different scenario, right? Like, I can't just sit there while you might be abducting or assaulting my children. So that one variable alone changes the cat. That's why I hate it when somebody says, well, what I'm going to do is, well, how do you know what you're going to do? You don't even know the situation yet.
Yeah. And also another thing is if you have kids and there's commotion, what do you think they're going to do if there's no plan? They're going to poke their head out.
They're going to look at it, right?
Yeah, and see what's going on. So they have to understand you're going to go with mom to the safe room. Yeah. Or whatever the situation.
Or you're going to hit the floor, depending on the situation, right? Whatever it might be, you know.
Each house is different. Each family is different. So it does. There are a few things that's why, you know, I don't like, you know, get a gun. That's not a plan. Even putting it in a book would be tough because where do you live? What's your house makeup? You know, where are the kids at? Where you have two floors, one floor. It's all different. So you have to look at it. But yeah, having a plan and rehearsing it is so much better than just winging it and getting a gun because it's just not gonna work.
What do you mean when you say prepared, not paranoid? What's that actually look like for the average person trying to protect their family?
So yeah, installing these security measures, understanding what you're gonna do, and going back to the 9 p.m. routine or 10 p.m. whatever it is. Sheriff's offices and police departments put that out because it's a good practice. It really is. You lock the doors, set the alarm, make sure everybody understands that. But not, you know, whenever I do this at night, I'm not thinking like I need to like low crawl out in the yard and check everything. And you know what I mean? Like I'm not setting up the booby traps.
Yeah.
But you can think of it as you're setting an alarm, which is kind of a that way. You know,
yeah.
I've got making sure all the lights are on. It's just a routine. So the more it becomes routine, the better you're going to feel about it. Security is inconvenient. So that's, and I don't know if I came up with this or not. Somebody else might have said it, but security is inconvenient, but so is assault. So you got to just make that part of your routine and overcome the inconvenience of it sometimes.
I think another thing people overlook is simply having a good inventory of all your valuables, because in the end, sometimes no matter what you do, it all fails and you could be robbed. And then insurance companies do not make a living by paying out every claim, right? I'm just going to say it, like their goal is to not have to pay you, right? And they're usually pretty good about paying you when they know they have to, but they're pretty good at not doing it when they don't have to. And so like having that inventory alone, because there's also like, you know, we talk about layers of security, but there's layers of circumstance. Like, yes, I can have my stuff stolen. I also can have my house burned down. Both of those require the same security redundancy as to having my property replaced by my insurance company, which is a solid inventory that I can say, this is what I had, this is what it's worth, this is what I acquired for, and this is what it takes to replace it. And then if that's on a piece of paper sitting in a drawer at my desk when my house burns down, right, or it's in some case thing that the criminal takes, I don't have that either. So you have to have redundancy on that. And just kind of thinking through that way, what if this happened, what would I do? And you, I think at some point you do have to accept the fact that no matter what you do, things can still go more wrong than you wanted them to. And then what's your redundancy for that?
Yeah, I mean, and that redundancy in the layers is very important. And, you know, it's talking about the locks, deadbolt, and a doorknob. I'm going to lock both of them because it's redundant. I'm not going to just use one of them, though. So, yeah, redundancy is very important. You know, it's just more things to stop something from happening. You know, if you talk about a fire, I've got fire extinguishers staged throughout the house. It's not necessarily because I'm paranoid about a fire, but I got them in the kitchen, obviously, by the fireplace, outside the garage, just as a redundant nature of it. So
that's a good thing right there, too. It makes me think of one of our things we do is I don't believe my wife will shoot somebody, period. I just don't. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think if she was absolutely at the last resort, maybe. But as a first response in a situation where you should, I don't think so. I have strategically throughout my home using Velcro concealed cans of very, very effective pepper spray. And again, will that, you know, make somebody fold up in a ball on the floor and give up? Probably not, but it is at another layer. And by having it distributed throughout the house and having her know where they are, that's a redundancy because I doubt she'll shoot you, but I have no doubt she'll spray you. Right. So that's kind of adjusting to the individual. Like, you know, she's not me and she's not going to act like me and she's not going to behave like me. And she's not trained like me. And she's not going to be. And that just is what it is. And then I have to look at things like that even for myself. And this is something else I think people need to think about. In our head, we're all still 35. And every year we're further from that number once we pass it. And there's certain things that I could do when I was 25 to 35 years of age that I can still do, but not with the speed, the accuracy, what have you. And we all are going to get there. And so we need to be building our lives toward where we're headed, not just where we are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it kind of going back to home invasion, and like a lot of guys probably have a really romantic thought of how that would go. You're going to be the hero. The guy's going to come through and you're going to get into a gunfight.
Yeah.
As effective as I think I might be at that, I don't want that to happen. And most people that have never been in that situation either won't behave like that or they'll be miserable after it happens. So, yeah, trying to do everything you can to prevent that. And, you know, like you said, yeah, pepper spray or whatever as a backup. But, yeah, we don't really – we want to stop it before it happens and avoid it at all costs, you know.
Well, we talked about your book a little bit. Let's do a little bit more of that in just a second. But first, tell people about your company, Legion Security. What do you guys do?
Yeah, so I've been focused mainly because of the book on residential lately, but I do vulnerability assessments. So that's physical and protocol reviews for homes, churches, and schools. So, you know, looking at a lot of, you know, everything I've talked about kind of from outside working its way in for schools, things like protocols and emergency operation planning and things, church security team training, kind of all that, a little bit of first aid, trauma medical stuff. So I haven't really gotten into firearms training, but I have people that can do that for me if that comes up.
And tell people, we've mentioned it a time or two, but tell people a little bit more about your book as well. They obviously can get it on Amazon. I have a link in the show notes today. If you're watching the video, right down in the video notes, there's a link over to the audio side, and you can find his book. You can find his company, his LinkedIn, stuff like that is all there. But I'll just remind you, because it happens every time I say it, if we're still live and you click it now, it won't work yet. We're not finished. But when we're done, it'll all be. So if you're driving down the road listening to this or whatever, and you're like, I want to check out the book or I want to see what he does or whatever, you can just go to the show notes for episode 3866. But tell us about the book. I've written a few books, and I know it takes a lot of effort to do.
Yeah. So when I first started my company, I was focused on residential. And so I had started working on this book. Now, I started working on it a couple years ago, at least 2 years ago. And then I put it down and I never picked it back up until I did a speaking engagement about residential security. And I was like, I should probably finish this thing. So ended up finishing a few months, which I should have probably done again years ago. But It's not super sexy. It's not like, you know, like I said, Claymore Mines and Tanglefoot and one-man CQB. It's a lot of the stuff we've talked about today, just very simple, practical things. You know, and as Green Berets, we always say we're good at the basics because you're supposed to do the basic stuff before you can do any advanced stuff. So this is fairly straightforward what anybody can do. A normal person can do all this stuff. So it's nothing crazy. I just want to say that up front. It's not a firearms book. It's none of that. It's just good practices that you should do. I'd go over some stats and kind of talk about things like repeat and near-repeat burglaries and things like that, but that's really what the book is about, just, you know, working from exterior, interior, stopping at the door, because, again, we talked about the planning. That's a whole other thing, but it's not firearms-related. It's lights, locks, dogs, protocols that you can do to kind of secure your home a little bit better.
Gotcha. I really appreciate you being with us today. We only have one question so far. So if you asked a question and you don't see it come up right now, I missed it or you didn't do it. So you got last call here, and we're gonna let Andrew go. But Dresden says, what would be a good security film to put on windows of a lower level of a suburban home? I forgot all about that. That is actually a pretty neat thing. Like 3M makes a product for that. That I'm not going to say you can't get through a window, but it does make it a hell of a lot harder.
Yeah, and I recommend security film a lot for churches and schools. I don't recommend ballistic because, one, it's extremely expensive, and two, it's, you know, nothing's bulletproof really when it comes to a window. So a lot of times it's a waste of money. Now, you know, I would suggest probably a lighter film. There's different levels of different mils thickness. So you'd have to call, you know, a local installer. But 3M does make that. And so even a lighter one is going to prevent somebody from breaking in. The thing with the window film, it needs to be anchored to the actual frame of the window. If it's not anchored, it could just fall out. The whole thing could just come out. So it needs to be anchored inside of the casement. So I would go with a lighter one for a residence. That's going to make it to where it's extremely hard to get into. The thicker ones, it's like you have to have a chainsaw basically to cut through the film.
You know, and I've seen a very amusing video of a guy that tried to break in. It was like a gas station or something. And they had the film up, and he took a cinder block and hurled it at the window. And, of course, it didn't work. It did crack the window, but then the cinder block bounced off the window and hit him in the skull and knocked him out bleeding on the ground. So if you're going to set up window film, you might want to set up a camera right in front of that window, just because you never know what, you know, gift might come your way. You could win America's Funniest Home Videos jackpot or something with that, or at least, you know, get a viral moment out of it. And it does work. I was actually, I mentioned Brian earlier from ITS, but when he did some reviews on it, I was surprised at how dadgone effective, because it doesn't look like it would work when you just look at what it is. But, you know, when you understand the physics behind it, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, just to kind of close that up, if you have glass on your door, a side light or glass inside of your front door or any door for that matter, usually it's on a front door, though, that's probably where I would put the film before the windows, because that will be expensive. But people are most likely going to be trying to get into the door before a window. I'm not saying people don't go through windows. They do. But generally, it's going to be a door, especially if the door is, like we talk about, those alcoves where it's concealed from neighbors. They can't see it, and they're screening. I would get the film on the door.
Yeah.
Or get a new door, honestly. Those glass door. I know that's not always practical, and it can be expensive. Yeah. But you have to think about those doors with the side lights as a threat, as a vulnerability, and address them. You know, a glass break sensor or something.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. They're really nice looking.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, my house, like, my wife loves them, so I'm lucky that the house just didn't write for them. But if I had to put them in, I would definitely want security film with those side those side windows because, like, again, you and arms in and what have you. Now, if you did it in my living room, you're probably going to leave without an arm. But that's you still can't rely on that. You just don't know what you don't know. Andrew, man, I appreciate you being with us today. Thanks for spending about an hour with us. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Jack. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, with that, let's go ahead and wrap up. I want to remind you guys, you know, we mentioned Andrew's book. You should definitely pick up a copy. But if you haven't picked up a copy of my book yet, please do so. Laws of Life Book 2, Now Build the System for Your Life. We spent quite a bit of last week on several bestsellers lists. We're still in like top 30 on like three different category lists on Amazon, so I appreciate that. If you guys, though, really want to give a gift to that young person in your life that thinks, you know, things are so hard now and what have you, this is the book for those people, like say 15 to 35. Tom Woods put it this way. He interviewed me about this book a couple days before it was released, and he said the title he ended up coming up with the episode after we had done it and he put it out was that this is the best time ever to be alive. It's not even close. There is so much opportunity in the world, but we have defunct mental programming that is by design sidelining people and convincing them that they can't, because then you want somebody else to do it for you, and that makes you a good little obedient serf, which is the goal of the masters of society. I don't believe in that. I think that today, yes, some things are harder. I'll always admit that it is harder to buy a house at, you know, 27 than it was when I bought my first house at 27. It doesn't mean there's not a tremendous additional amount of opportunity out there, and there really is. And this book is, I guarantee you the things in it will work for you because it worked for me, and I'm not the badass people think I am. I'm really not. I was at times lazy. I didn't always put 100% into everything, but I always wanted more in life, and these are the things that I discovered along the way, along with book one. This would be a great thing to add to your library. Again, make a gift to somebody else. Thank you guys for tuning in today. And remember, I don't have any item of the day for you guys today, but you can always also help us out by doing your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. You start there, you'll help us out no matter what you eventually buy. And if you're not a member of the Support Brigade, consider becoming a member of the Support Brigade. The discounts that I get you as a member will pay for your membership, and you'll help support the show. So it's win, win, win. I win because I get money. That's good. I like money. I don't hate money. I have to earn a living or I can't keep doing this. You win because you get your money back plus. And the providers that I work with then get discounts on the services and products that they offer you, so they have a fixed incremental revenue ROI. So everybody wins with it. And I would just throw a little thing out there at the end. You build a business today, think that way. How can you set up a situation where everybody wins? That's the way to abundance. With that, take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with an expert counsel Q&A show for the week.
They said you should have a house the American way. $1 down, $1 a month, and you never have to pay.